Okay, you're good to record.
All right, welcome to Planning Commission tonight. We are glad to have everybody here with us. We have some guests here. Who tell us who you guys are. Is this a class? Just students?
Now you can talk.
Us three are from the University of Utah. We're in a class called
Planning Theory and Practice.
Planning Theory and Practice. And we have an assignment where we need to come in and observe a City Planning Commission meeting.
Well, we're glad to have you here with us. We hope you have a great time. Thank you for coming. And then we have probably our urban design people with us joining us also.
Yeah, UVU, our urban design students.
Thank you for being here. Any public comment? Dee?
I've noticed across the street that the mural on the wall is advancing nicely.
It doesn't.
And I think it's going to look really nice, and I think that the desire to do some artwork on some of the buildings is, that one is great. I'm not sure about some of the others that may be around, but I think that one is great.
Thank you, Dee. We appreciate it. Any other public comments? All right, we will move to our work session. Oh, was there a public comment over there?
No, there's just somebody waiting at the door.
I don't know if they are unsure. Okay, and then we will move to our work session, Town Center Urban Design Standards Project by VODA, Landscaping and Planning.
I'll give a little intro since I wrote the staff report. This
Perfect.
Is Allie Avery.
Thank
for
you,
the
Allie.
Record. So in 2024, the city was given funding from Wasatch Front Regional Council for the development of Town Center Urban Design Standards. We put out a request for proposals in August, or July maybe, and in August we entered into a contract with VODA. This is Mark Morris from VODA. And the intent is to have design standards adopted as code for a new town center zoning district. So that would, right now we've kind of been doing a stopgap with the P district, but this would be consistent, standardized design and appearance of the developments in the town center. Mm-hmm. And then after that code is adopted, Mark will see that through, then city staff will then initiate a rezoning process for the town center area. Some of you, I think, were part of the form-based code review. Yes, I know some of you were, which like that kind of fizzled out as we realized that we needed to go a different direction. We were trying to do that work without a consultant and do it from a template, and we needed some more expertise. So we are relying now on the expertise of VODA to help us with that. And so Mark is here with a presentation about this to just get you guys familiar with the process as we begin this. And we want to, he's committed to moving quickly on this project. We're not going to let it fizzle out, and we're going to get it adopted within 7 months, I think is what we said on the schedule. So that will require a commitment from you guys to review quickly as well. So I'll turn the time over to Mark for his presentation.
I would love it if you click through.
Thanks, Allie. So as Allie mentioned, my name is Mark Morris. I am with a small urban design firm. We're in downtown Salt Lake. I've got a small team. We do landscape architecture work and urban design. We've been around for going on 15 years. Most recently, we worked with North Salt Lake in 2019 or 20 to do some wayfinding and branding work. So the little logo that shows up in your email signature was part of that project. We have done quite a bit of work recently with urban design standards, with form-based code, with development guidelines, things to codify community goals. And that really is the intent with design standards is to look at your existing documents, look at what are the goals that the community has for new development, and how do we get that into the code so that the development that you're seeing is really helping to accomplish those goals. As we go through this, if you've got questions, this is a work session, so by all means, if you've got comments or questions, like Allie mentioned, we're really just at the very beginning of this process. And so what we try to do early in the process is spend some time reviewing what are the plans that you have on the books? This is not a full planning process. We're not starting from scratch and saying, what do you want to see? We're really saying, what do you have in your existing documents that say, what do we want to accomplish in the town center? What sort of parts of the urban design are most vital, most important? And then how do we structure a document that is implementable, it is easy to understand? The form-based code template, in talking with Ali, that can get complex and pretty cumbersome pretty quickly. And so what we're aiming for with these standards is to keep them concise and simple, something that staff can easily understand, planning commission can easily understand, applicants and property owners can also easily understand. It doesn't do anyone any good to have a 200-page document that nobody can really make heads or tails of. And so generally with a project like this, we try to make the ordinance and the code itself very graphic. Usually, if you see a graphic of something, it's a lot easier to understand what that requirement is than if it's, you know, 5,000 words and, you know, the legal department has walked through. So what we've been doing, like I mentioned, is going through existing documents. You've got a market study from 2024 that looks at what are the market realities for the town center. We want to make sure that that study and its recommendations are aligned with the physical form that's recommended or required, so that we're not just saying, here's pie in the sky, something, something. We're really saying, market study tells us this, here's what's feasible over the next 10, 20 years, and how do we incrementally get there with it. So inevitably the question will come up when you start rezoning and making changes like this. A lot of times property owners think that this is, you know, this is a stick that they're being forced to do something. This is really only something that's going to impact new redevelopment. And so existing businesses stay as long as they want, existing structures stay as long as they want. But when redevelopment comes along, when properties change hands, when somebody decides they want to tear something down and build, we want the guidelines to be in place so that incrementally, as things change, we're getting closer and closer to that vision for the town center. Any thoughts, questions so far? We're all good. Okay. A few years back, 2016, the city finished a town center master plan, which we've been looking through. It has a lot of really great recommendations and analysis for the town center. It's a far more global study of the town center than what the design guidelines will be. But we've been looking through that and kind of pulling out pieces that would be worth kind of worth considering as we get into codifying more of those design elements. So there's a lot, you know, it covers things like, you know, BRT and transportation issues and all kinds of things. We're really just focused on what does the code say is required when redevelopment happens in the town center area.
Ryan, did you have a question?
Is one of the goals or purposes to have less P districts?
Yes.
Okay.
It standardizes P districts to an extent where what we would normally have in the negotiated terms is just the common practice.
So that the code is calling out what the design standard is,
so
for, rather than staff having to review?
It makes it so it's more objective across the board. So all sites have the equal opportunity to develop the same as their neighbors and things like that. And it sets it up for more like continuity and things like that throughout their town center.
It sets the expectations for the developers as well. With the P district process, they don't really know, nobody knows where we're going to end up. At the end, but this just tells you exactly these are the expectations of the city and the town center.
And we'd still have the ability potentially to do the P district rezone where we might negotiate some of those standards, but it's going to be less likely because the urban design standards are more about the form.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
So
it's not going to eliminate the ability to do.
No.
But less,
it would
less,
eliminate
less
the need for it in the town center.
Yep.
And generally with urban design guidelines, the end goal is predictability, that staff knows what, you know, when an applicant comes through, we know what we're going to get. Planning Commission knows what's going to happen. Applicants know what's being asked of them. Everyone hates vagueness and unpredictability. And so rather than going case by case, it's really saying in the town center, here's what we're requiring.
Yeah, it's going to stop me from in meetings along the town center stretch saying things like, yeah, we want good architecture. Okay, what does that mean? How do we get good architecture, right? And so these will answer some of those questions.
It also helps it not feel personal for the applicant. Like with some of our P districts, people have felt like it's like, well, you just didn't like my project. And so since it's so broad, it felt more like, well, if you're in a good mood or bad mood, or if you like it or don't like it, where it just is like, it's not personal. It's just, here's the design code.
Yep.
Yeah, we don't want design tyrants, and we don't want one person's opinion just like, oh, well, I don't like this person, so.
Yeah, or you bugged us, or, yeah.
Yeah, you try to make it as, you know, as neutral.
Yeah.
As possible. If it's good and meets those standards.
So is there a stated objective to have continuity to the P district? And I mean, there's a certain look and feel, and it's not that much different than what you see in lots of the other cities. I mean, it's sort of fairly common with this generation of construction and all that, at least in my opinion. There are some outliers that have kind of Western themes or ski town motif or whatever, but
sure.
But is that part of it, is to try to match it to what we've been doing here?
You know, that is a good question. Generally, standards like these are not architectural standards. Mm-hmm. So with architectural standards, you know, you go to Park City, they have very restrictive architectural standards. They want it to look like everything here was built in 1895. Mm-hmm. Park City's Main Street in the 70s looked absolutely nothing. The things that are there today are meant to look old-timey, but nothing there is all that old. Standards like these are really focused on the form of the development as opposed to, you know, what kind of style of architecture do we want. So we want to leave it broad enough so that an individual applicant can come in and say, well, it's my property. I want something that looks a little more modern. As long as it meets the requirements, it can be approved.
And
so it's not to say we've chosen, okay, 1910 is the year.
It's
not aesthetic. Yeah.
More like the type of architectural guidelines you might see in this code will be the glazing requirement. How much window frontage on the main floor is required? Kind of like what we required in Village Station, if you recall that development. The commercial projects have to have, I think, 35% glazing on the top two stories and 50% on the bottom or something like that. But it codifies it. Am I right? Mark?
Yeah, that's great.
Can I make one comment? Commissioners, when you speak, will you start with your name just for the minutes, because we don't have recording to see who's speaking? And I think we all know your voices, but just in case.
One case study that I wanted to talk about briefly, we did some similar urban design guidelines for Midvale about 6 years ago. If any of you have been to Midvale's Main Street, they have a historic Main Street that has very much been forgotten. Most people don't know that it's there. It has a good collection of historic structures, but it also had a lot of vacant lots, a lot of underused buildings. It was very much had seen better days. So their urban design standards were very much about infill, which I know is not the case for your town center. But what they wanted was something that even if it looked like it was a modern building, it fit in with the general form historically for their Main Street. So you can see this spine kind of running north-south. That was their historic Main Street. It, you know, predates I-15. It predates just about anything. Once upon a time, if you lived in the south half of the valley, you had to travel to Midvale to, you know, buy anything, because that was the closest, you know, real town. That's not the case anymore. The economics have wildly changed. But now that they're seeing a lot of demand, they wanted to make sure that their historic core wasn't just decimated and clear-cut for modern buildings, because that, you know, might have been cheaper. So these urban design standards, you can see this graphic here. We've kind of laid out, okay, here's the kind of height and massing of a new building. We're not saying here's exactly what it has to look like, but we're just saying here are the range of heights that might be appropriate. So everything that you see here has been built in the last 4 years. These buildings, you know, some of them look more modern than others. They've got a good amount of brick. Like Mackenzie mentioned, we're focused really on, okay, how much permeability and glazing do we have on the ground floor? The upper floors, how are we dealing with setbacks and architectural detailing? Again, someone can come in and have an architectural style that they like, and you know, as long as it meets the urban design guidelines, that's totally fine. It just needs to meet the, you know, massing, setbacks, all of those requirements. So if you haven't been to Midvale's Main Street recently, it's worth a little bit of a trip. They have brand new cactus and tropicals, they have a new pizza place. They're over the moon because they hadn't had anything built on their main street in 20 plus years. It was pretty empty. So they're doing great. I think their standards, with any standards, after you've used them for a few years, you go in and you kind of adjust a little bit. So even when we're done with this project and you've started using it, it's code. After a few years, you may say, let's adjust a few things. So anyway, just a case study worth looking at. Again, we're trying to codify community goals. And so knowing what's the intent for the town center area, what do we want it to be? This is a time frame of 25 plus years. This all isn't gonna happen in the next 5 or 10 years. It's really saying, incrementally, as these parcels redevelop, how do we make sure we have design guidelines in place to get us there? Step at a time. One thing that we've started with is just looking at how do we structure some urban design guidelines. We are trying to keep this as concise as possible, which is a lot harder than writing a 100-page document. It's very easy to have lots and lots and lots of requirements. One thing that may be challenging for this group and for the city council is to be okay with a concise document. That there may be things that you really want to have a lot of control over, that if we allow a little bit more flexibility for applicants and property owners, that will give them some ability to do what they want, but also the city gets what we want. So we'll go through each one of these. This again, this is just a draft structure. If we decide we need to add things, we can add. The intent really, I would say, the focus here is the deal breakers, the things that we really want to worry about a lot are things that are really difficult to change. So where a building sits on the property, how it addresses the street, where the main entrance is, those are all things that are really difficult to change once the building is in place. What color it's painted, even what, you know, is it brick, is it some kind of metal cladding? Those are things that a new property owner could really change pretty quickly, pretty easily, and relatively cheaply compared to this building is in the wrong place. It's not really giving us what we want as far as defining the town center space. So as we go through these, again, not all requirements are made equal. Again, if it's hard to change, you want to worry about that a lot. It's easy to change, you know, let's have a requirement in there. But it's something that could easily adjust over time. So this came from your previous form-based code process. And really the first thing that we look at is breaking down an area like this into sub-districts. We can adjust these, we can modify, but I think this is a great place to start. A lot of times, you know, members of the public see a project approved in the town center and the immediate assumption is, oh, well, the city's going to let that happen anywhere in the city. It's sort of like, oh, if it happens there, it can go anywhere. We're really saying context is what's driving these decisions. And so we can say we've split up this area into sub-districts. What's allowed in those sub-districts is going to be different. What heights are allowed, what setbacks are required, what are the things each of these sub-districts and how are they different? I think the sort of buffer areas around the perimeter are especially important. So if something redevelops, you know, if it's a little bit lower height, where a taller building might be appropriate, you want to have kind of a little bit of a step down into the neighborhood surrounding the town center. So again, if anyone starts asking questions about the town center, the context and where it's located is what is going to drive those decisions. Any thoughts, questions on that?
Commissioner Marsh, you got to make sure you get the annexed part in there.
Yeah, this process was done.
I'm semi-joking. I just look, my house isn't out there.
He's feeling left out.
Gotcha. We'll include you if you
want. Just your property, though.
Just mine.
Just a lot of
your property.
Because your neighbors are really excited.
Just your street. Yeah.
You know it.
So the first section that we'll talk about are setbacks. The reason why urban designers care about setbacks is if we bring buildings up to the sidewalk, we bring them closer to the public realm, we get a lot more continuity of experience. We've all been to places where you walk around a place and it's sort of like you're always discovering things. You know very quickly when that starts to fall off and you've sort of arrived at the perimeter of a town center. And so those setbacks, again, define the public realm. That glazing and the permeability on the ground floor, that can go a long way to defining the space and as a human, as a pedestrian experiencing that space, if it feels like there's more to do, there's more to discover there. So setbacks, urban designers will talk about a street wall, which is really if you look down the street, do you have kind of a consistency of definition of that space? Those images of Midvale's Main Street, their street wall was very snaggletooth street wall. It was very erratic. And so every project that comes along starts to define that street wall a little bit better. Along 89, along Center Street, we may have different expectations of defining of that street wall. This project you have across the street defines that street wall very, very nicely, where you've got things, you've got doors on the street. It's mostly residential, but at least you've got a nice definition of that street wall. Access points are super vital. I'd say most of the battles that I've had in the urban design world is where is the front door going to go? And you'd be surprised at how frequently that becomes a really difficult topic to resolve. Usually with urban design, we're kind of saying we're going to push parking to the back, and every developer wants to say, well, then I'm going to put the front door on the back, and what you're left with is, you know, you may have a street wall, but there's no place for someone to enter. And so what we're trying to do is say, okay, you can by all means have a door on the back of the building to access the parking, but we also need a door on the front. And again, you'd be surprised at how frequently that's a big battle. So not just the setback, but having access points frequently along that street wall is very important. Mix of uses, we'll talk about uses a bit. With urban design standards like these, uses kind of take a backseat to the process. You can still have use requirements, but we'll talk in a minute about sort of how that's regulated. I mentioned parking location. Again, we're trying to push parking to the back. Parking is a utility. Parking is the thing that is necessary for any development. But if it's in the front, then we really get what Highway 89 is from almost end to end. It's just a parking lot with a building behind it. Where we're trying to define a space a little bit better, we want to pull the buildings to the street, develop that street wall, and have the parking in the rear of all of the development or structured where feasible. Building height. Most of the battles, I would say, with design standards like these, when you're setting them up, is trying to establish building height. What is appropriate building height for these sub-districts? This graphic that we've got on the bottom here, this was a study that we did in Murray just last year, working through similar design standards where they wanted more predictability. And we spent a lot of time doing some massings to say what would be an appropriate building height in these different districts. So you can see from the different colors, you can see different heights. And we were really working through how do we accommodate demand for development, but also recognize historic development patterns and how does it fit in with the context of the neighborhoods around it. So we haven't done any of that yet for the town center here, but that's something that we'll spend some time working through what's an appropriate building type.
So, Commissioner Jorgensen, can I ask another question?
Of course.
So, thinking back to the economic study that was done on the town center, the market study, and that, how sensitive is building height to making whether projects feasible or not? You know, we oftentimes see developments come in and when they're really, really high, because that can have more housing units and so forth,
sure.
That becomes that issue you talked about Edge District, and you know that becomes a real point of consternation for anybody who's nearby.
Sure.
How sensitive is it to?
Oh, that's the whole ballgame, yeah. Right there, yeah. Is the building height.
Yeah.
You know, urban real estate, no matter where it is, especially in a place like this is a key part of the city. This is in a very important commercial corridor. This land is going to be expensive, and when you have expensive land, you have to build high in order to make it work. So. Working through building heights and where that's appropriate, I think you kind of look at, you've got kind of an epicenter where your buildings may be highest, and then as you go further out, that steps down. Where you're really surrounded with single family neighborhoods, you want to make sure that you're stepping down as you get into those places. Building heights, again, will, you know, a lot of cities say, well, let's just structure the parking, let's just put it into the building. And that is just asking for the cost of that development to just skyrocket. And so if you're going to cap building heights and say, we don't want anything taller than three stories, you're really saying, we're going to use up most of our land for surface parking, because if we cap it that low, you're never going to be able to make structured parking work. And so you're sacrificing a huge amount of your land to surface parking, just because that's what the economics are. So there are some areas where that building height may be totally fine and appropriate, and you can get some structured parking of some kind. But we have to be really sensitive to figure out, okay, where's the best place for that to happen. In Murray, for example, you can see these really tall, and again, this is maximum building height. This isn't saying everything has to be this tall. It's just saying you could go to 7 or 8 stories if you wanted. They have a little bit of topography that kind of made sense, that if you had taller buildings in that place, they would kind of disappear a little bit, even a 7 or 8 story building, because they had a little bit of topography change. Where your town center is all about topography change, there may be places where a taller building would be totally fine and it would have minimal impact on the things around it. They also have a track station and a front runner station right there, and so packing in a little bit more density closer to that made a lot more sense. I'm kind of downplaying it. We fought about these building heights for probably 3 months and finally got to a place where everyone felt like that was the right maximum to set. So we'll spend some time doing something similar to this and just say, okay, here are some building heights that would be economically feasible and would kind of accomplish the goals that have been established by the city. But it takes a bit of time.
And just, you can validate what I'm taking away from this. One of the keys, well, this again, Commissioner Jorgensen, and one of the keys would be when you define the sub-districts, there'd be uniformity on the building heights allowed in that sub-district. So that's kind of where we really have to pay attention.
Indeed. I think that defining it by sub-district, and these, again, this is maximum building height. And so with most of these design guidelines, we're going to have parameters. So we're going to say, okay, your minimum building height is 2 stories, your maximum is 5. As long as you fall in that range, that's totally fine. So we're not saying you have to build, you know, a full story.
No, I get that.
Just saying, here are the parameters that you have to follow.
Thank you.
So, and sometimes communities have a problem with a minimum building height and say, well, why can't we just say a 1-story building is totally fine? Where we're trying to define a town center, we may want to say, well, we really want to encourage 2 or 3 stories as a minimum in some of these sub-districts. So the other thing to think about with building heights, generally with design guidelines like these, we regulate ground floor height and upper floor height separately. And so ground floor height is super vital because buildings last a lot longer than businesses do. What you really want are buildings that, you know, a business may be there for 20 years, but if that business changes or that use changes, you want that building to be reusable and have it to be like, oh, well, we have to tear it down. Costco is kind of a perfect example of like, okay, that building is a single-use building. There is nobody else really out there. Maybe Sam's Club could do it, but yeah, Costco, its form and its structure like that, there's one thing that's going to happen in that. With a town center, what you really want are buildings that are recyclable. They don't have to go anywhere. A new owner can come in and do whatever they want. The ground floor height is a really key part of that, if your ground floor heights are too low, commercial businesses are just never going to be able to work in that space. So regardless of whether we require commercial use on that ground floor, even if it is residential and it just has taller building or taller floor heights, that makes it so that building is more reusable. Upper floor heights are less important. They're still important, but again, we have to regulate those separately. Most of these, all of these districts will have a maximum kind of overall building height, but again, you'll have different parameters to say, okay, if it's a residential building, you know, 9-floor upper floor height, it's totally fine. If it's commercial, you want it a little bit higher. But those two have to be regulated separately, just so that building doesn't end up as something that, it can only be one thing for, you know, the rest of the time. So again, we'll spend some time with building heights. That's always, as I'm sure you've experienced on the Planning Commission, building heights are always a touchy subject. Facade articulation is another thing that we'll have a section on. And facade articulation, there's vertical articulation and there's horizontal articulation. And what you want is a little bit of both. It doesn't need to be elaborate. It doesn't need to be a huge amount of articulation. But what you really don't want is a building that has just a flat, you know, it's really just one surface with some windows. That will never get anyone feeling excited about, you know, a town center space. So while these aren't architectural requirements, how that architecture is expressed is something that'll be, will be a requirement. It could be brick, it could be metal, it could be any number of materials. We just want to make sure that we have articulation in that facade. This image you can see, here's some articulation where the ground floor, you've got this form, and then you've got a little bit of step back, and then you've got another form up there. A little further down, you can see there's a little change in that street wall. So we don't want it to be just perfectly flat, solid, you know, glassy box. What we want is to have something that feels considered human scale. We've exaggerated the articulation in this graphic. We're not going to have huge setbacks like that. What we want is just to say, here's a range where you need to have some change in that facade. Windows and doors, we will talk a lot about windows and doors. How much, you know, percentage of openness along the frontage of the building, that's, again, an important urban design element to consider, especially on the ground floor. What you don't want is someone walking along the building that has no windows or doors for 100 feet. That's never going to accomplish much as far as a town center experience goes. Ground floor activation, this is kind of the whole ballgame when it comes to urban design. What does someone experience as a visitor to the town center, whether it's someone who's visiting every week because they live here, or whether it's someone who's just visiting for the first time? We want to have active uses on the ground floor. One of the takeaways from the market study was we can't require retail on the entire ground floor of the entire town center. There just is not market demand for that much retail. What we can say is we want services, we want other things that are engaging with the street. It could be that some portion of it is residential, depending on where it is in those sub-districts. The key, I would say, is focusing the requirement of ground floor retail or ground floor services, focusing in it in a small enough area that you kind of get a critical mass of this is the epicenter of the town center. We can't, over the amount of space that we've got, there's just no way to have that much much ground floor commercial activity, but we want it to be active. Even if it's residential, again, I'll point across the street, the residential units across the street have doors, they have windows, they've got little kind of living spaces out there. That's a certain amount of ground floor activation. So again, by sub-district, we'll go through some ideas of how to have kind of maximum ground floor activation that is, again, market-based, feasible from a development standpoint.
So sorry to participate. This is my call to fame. That meeting minutes. But yeah. Anyway,
You don't need to say your name. We know who you are.
Last year we did a big effort for all the zone districts to go through all the different types of business uses and what's permitted and what's not. And really we're trying to minimize the amount of conditional use permits and things like that. And where regulations requires a huge effort. Staff did a Herculean job. It occupied a lot of time on the commission, and I think City Council ultimately approved it pretty much without changes because of all the good work that had gone on primarily by staff, but input from the Planning Commission. Will that need to be replicated for, you know, a zone district or not? Or I want to buy a building over here and I want to put in a used car lot. I know that's not allowed on the Highway 89, but anyway, what will be the constraints, if any, on the different types of uses?
That's a great question. Use, like I said, in kind of town center guidelines like this, use kind of takes a backseat to the form of the development. Generally, what we would have is, here are some tables that say, here are uses that are acceptable for the ground floor of the development. Here are uses that are acceptable for upper stories of the development. But I think what we would do is look to, okay, we've recently updated how all of those uses are regulated and make sure that they're compatible. We're not going to replicate that. We're not going to start over.
Yeah, well, it didn't cover the town center.
It did in a way. So Mackenzie Johnson here. Thank you, Andrea. So our land use table that we spent eons on was just for our CG, CS, MG, MD zones, right? But our specific use standards in Chapter 19, which is a whole new ball game, regulates all non-residential zones. So we've already got our highway commercial zone that is basically the town center or Highway 89. And the land uses that are acceptable in them are very broad and vague, general office, retail, things like that. The prohibited ones are a lot more specific, like no automotive shops, things like that. So we have twofold. This will help guide out of these permitted uses, what do we want to see, like you said, on ground floor retail? Or what do we want to allow on ground floor? What's okay on the next stories and that kind of thing? But our specific use standards in Chapter 19 stand because they are still for all of those zones.
I think that the key takeaway from doing these urban design standards is that the form regulates the function. So a used car dealership is not going to want to go into any of these buildings because they can't park the cars out front for people to look at. So in most cases, the form will regulate the function, and we don't even need to worry about restricting uses because the building won't be set up in a way that is conducive to their use.
We'll still want to keep our list of prohibited uses, no wholesale manufacturing, maybe some light assembly would be okay depending, or craftsmanship, but those are all things we'll work out. But like Ali said, you're not going to get the big scale warehouses or disruptive manufacturing in these types of buildings.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, that use discussion, I think having some flexibility, I think where we're applying additional requirements to property owners in a specific area, I think we need to make sure that they understand, like, we may be regulating development in certain ways a little more specifically, but we're also giving a wide range to say, like, okay, we're not saying specifically here's exactly what it has to be. We're just saying here's a whole menu that you can choose from. We can't decide, no one in this room can decide what the market is going to demand. You know, 10 years ago it was office and all kinds of things. Now office is kind of out the window. Housing is, you know, everything. So those changes in the market, we want to make sure that the guidelines can be flexible. So when the market demand changes, it's still feasible to develop. Development comes in waves, and we want to make sure.
I appreciate all that. I think it'll be covered. My obvious concern would be compatibility, safety in particular. You know, if truly it was like left to whatever a developer wanted to do and what a tenant wanted to do, and you wanted to have bulk storage of hazardous chemicals, and it's just not compatible with you know, all sure. these buildings adjacent to it, that's something that you wouldn't want, but it'll get covered through the prohibited uses that are already there, because, you know, we can find that to industrial zones and things like that, so yeah.
Yeah, the prohibited uses, they can be as specific as the city wants to be. You have land use authority to make those decisions. That's well-established case law that you, as a city, can say, oh, you know, we don't want vape shops, sexually oriented businesses. We don't necessarily even want car sales or repair in this particular area. You have every right to make those decisions. But I think we'll work through what exactly those use tables look like.
Anyway, thank you.
So, yeah. And I think, you know, as a city, you're very used to, like, use is where your control is, right? And so letting go of that a little bit and having a little bit more flexibility, sometimes it takes a little time before you feel like, okay, this is going to be fine. But like Ali said, the form of that development is going to eliminate a lot of those, like a car dealership, you know, Costco obviously is built in the town center. Those sorts of regulations can kind of regulate in a different way.
Is Commissioner Holbrook, is there a downside that I'm not seeing to like the belts and suspenders view of we add that fifth column to the land use for town center? And I mean, we spent all that time going through four different zones of what we wanted in each one. If we did take the time to go with one more and cover the town center, isn't that just, like I said, it's the belt and suspenders kind of thing. The form kind of keeps people out, but we just make sure we know what we want in the town center?
I think we could potentially look at adding it to the table, but I also think that with the town center being its specific own thing and we want it to develop as its own thing, this set of standards is where it would be most applicable to have our list. And more specifically, if you look at our highway commercial zone right now, not saying that's the best practice for the land uses, I think we will learn a lot from Mr. Morris, but the experience I've had so far is we have a very small list of, a very vague list of permitted, and our list of prohibited is quite long. And it's more vague. So we don't get into the nitty gritty of the types of wholesale you might see the way we did in our code in our last amendment, or the type of manufacturing. We just say no wholesale, no manufacturing, and those types of things. So I think it's a discussion point of where we want to put it and how we want to put it. But it will all be covered through this exercise. Does that make sense? I think we're still too early on to know formatting-wise where it belongs.
Right. Commissioner Jorgensen, I just think at some point you might play a little game of what if, and then you ask what if somebody wants to come in and do this, and would that fit? You could use the land use table for your, like, well, what if this one, and no manufacturing, period. Easy question.
Yep, and it's the same thing as what we deal with in our other commercial and manufacturing zones where, what if someone comes in with a land use that we have never heard of or thought of? Okay, they'll do a code amendment. And we can advise accordingly as we go. That doesn't happen often. But yes, it is a conversation we are going to continue to have.
I do like what Mark said about letting go of control a little bit, though. If you just take your foot off the brakes a little bit and let the market dictate it, then the area can transform as the market transforms. Because we can't look at a use table and predict what's going to happen in 10 years. Nobody could have been like, pickleball is going to be a popular sport, right? So so you can't like put in there that we want pickleball in all our parks, knowing in advance that in 10 years pickleball was going to be the rage. So that's kind of the same thing with your use categories. If you just take your foot off the brake and let the market take care of it, is the thing we care about is we care about safety, of course. But we care about what it looks like from the outside and that we're creating like an experience for people in the town center. And those are the things that we care about the most, the form more than the function.
Yeah, and I think that use discussion, you know, if our end goal is activation, we want people using the town center at all hours of the day and night. We want people who are here working, they're here from 9 to 5. We want people here living who are here, we'll say 5 to, you know, the next morning. You know, dinner, restaurants, shopping. So what our focus when it comes to use is saying, okay, there are certain things that, you know, obviously heavy manufacturing, industrial use is not appropriate in the town center. are really saying, okay, let's keep it pretty flexible so that as things come along, there's some, we don't have to go back and change the code every time a good idea comes along. Someone can say, okay, here, it fits within these categories, let's go for it. I use 25th Street in Ogden as an example. 25th Street is like a perfect example of like a reusable urban form. Like 25th Street, it has been, you name it, it was gambling dens and brothels. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, all kinds of things, but those buildings have been there. They are the same buildings. They have changed. And, you know, anyone in the area knows if I go down to 25th Street, something's going on down there. It's a place you go just to kind of be. Where we're starting a little bit more from scratch, like that's going to take some time, but we want the form to be reusable. Those uses will always change. Making sure that they're not noxious uses, but things that are flexible enough that the market can, you know, kind of accommodate that. So the last bit we'll talk about is kind of a catch-all. The last section would be other requirements. So we're talking about landscape, other types of pedestrian improvements, you know, furnishings along the street, the kind of stuff that makes it a livable space, lighting as well. All of those things are pretty simple, but also that's kind of the jewelry on the town center, that you have to have those things to kind of make it more than just buildings. It's a place that feels lived in and comfortable, but that's kind of the catch-all section. So,
again, of course, Mr. Jorgensen over participating yet again. What about dovetailing with active transportation plan?
I think we'll review the active transportation plan. These requirements don't get into like bike networks or things like that, but I think if the active transportation plan says, okay, this is a BRT route or this is an important cycling route, we would want to make sure that we'd say, okay, in this particular sub-district, like having, you know, generous bike racks and, you know, places where you can put a bus waiting area. So those types of things is sort of as far as we might go in standards like these, but we'll pull out, you know, what are the places where that might be most appropriate.
Thank you.
Yeah. Commissioner Holbrook, I remember from our exercises in doing the form-based code, one of the things that was important in the other category was utilities and ensuring that the crow's nests and things like that, as it gets developed, the utilities go underground.
Or are disguised in some way.
Yeah, or even where the transformers are placed and things like that have been.
Transformer location is difficult because Rocky Mountain Power is going to, they're going to do what
they do what they want. But what we could do is take our art emphasis that the city has taken recently and have, they have to be wrapped. They have to be disguised or camouflaged. They can't just be the big green box in the middle of the sidewalk, and it won't happen again, dang it, if I have anything to say about it.
It's fascinating when you see a community that's really embraced that, and the one that I would point to is where I traveled this summer, Victoria, British Columbia, and they've done that extensively. And a lot of times the artwork was actually just photographs from the area. Yeah. Anyway, it was done on a large scale. It was very, very common.
That's great.
Yeah, Commissioner Marsh, Holiday has like school children art around there. They're little transformers that are normally green. They have all the like kids art that's been painted into a mural.
Yeah, there's always a way to kind of make lemonade out of lemons that the power company gives us. But I think looking at how much influence can we have on where those are located. Because again, if it's like every corner has a big, massive green box on it, that gets the
But definitely them being buried.
Yeah, the overhead lines it continues. Anytime a development comes in, we, as part of the P district process right now, we're like, hey, get those underground.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and these standards really are for like planning approval. You're still going to go through like engineering,
site plan.
That's all going to be still, you know, any development process. This is really for the kind of planning process.
Commissioner Marsh, you said earlier there was this differentiation in design elements for retail versus service, especially when it comes to that ground floor. Like, what are some of the other like urban design elements that go into consideration of that? Because there's sort of this interesting mix of like, you know, wanting people there around the clock, which is more service or what you know, usually more service oriented versus retail, where most retail is done at 5 or 6. So how do you, what design elements, if you're trying to encourage one versus the other, would you incorporate?
I think that ground floor height is really vital. There's sort of a range of where you want the ground floor to be, not too high, but mm-hmm. also not too low. I wouldn't say retail and service have wildly different requirements, but if it's like, okay, the ground floor height, let's say it's all 14 feet, we're requiring a pretty tall height. We want to just make sure, you know, if a restaurant comes in, they can use that if it's retail. Some spaces, if you require too high of a ground floor height, it's kind of a big cavernous space, and it ends up not being great. With the Midvale project, we had some options where you could have a double floor or a double height ground floor, where if you wanted to do like an interior mezzanine, you could have kind of two stories in one. So there may be areas where that makes sense. A lot of times it's just kind of leaving it open, so if a developer comes in and says, I want to build this great restaurant and they want to have, you know, a double height mezzanine level, it's not like, oh, we have to go in and change the whole code, because that's not within the parameters. So there's lots of space there, but in general you kind of give a range and say, okay, here's the minimum, here's the maximum, it just has to land somewhere in there.
Okay. So, thanks.
Great, I think that was the end of that. I just wanted to mention there are a couple things that as part of this project we're also developing that we'll come back and kind of walk through. We want to make sure that the code is very user-friendly, as I mentioned. One thing that we'll develop is a prototype. The prototype is really looking at, we're going to choose a site here in the town center and kind of apply all of the standards to it, so that you can walk through each one of those. If you're sitting down with an applicant or a property owner, you have that prototype to say, okay, when I say articulation, here's what I'm talking about, or when I'm regulating upper floor versus ground floor height, here's what I'm talking about. So that prototype is going to have, you know, things like this, and I think staff already has a pretty good idea of which site we'll use, but we'll have a site that is, you know, one that everyone is familiar with, and to say, here's how that code would be applied to that particular site. And it'll go through kind of step by step, you know, the setbacks, the articulation, all of those things. But it's done in a way that it'll show up in a staff report, or it might show up in a discussion here. But it's something that you can use just to make sure that everyone's on the same page with that conversation. When you have new planning commissioners come in, using that prototype to help them understand what that code is focused on is kind of the intent. And then the other thing, we'll have basically a worksheet, and that worksheet will go through each parameter so that an applicant can fill out, here's exactly how we're meeting the code and its requirements. That'll help with staff review. It'll also help with discussions here with the Planning Commission. If someone is saying, I want a little leeway on this one parameter, you can have that discussion as to, you know, why they are asking for a little bit of leniency, but it's spelled out very clearly in that worksheet. It's not just, here's the code and good luck. It's, okay, fill this out. When you're done with that application, we can kind of focus the conversation on the parts that maybe they're not quite meeting, or maybe they have a good case for why, you know, why it's not feasible for that particular site. So again, we won't just leave you with code, but some tools that you can refer back to when you're having urban design discussions. Any additional questions?
Great, thank you. We look forward to working more with you.
Of course.
As the process moves forward.
Mr. Morris.
Yeah, that's great. All right,
very
we will move to report on City Council action items.
Okay, I'll be super fast. September 2nd, the City Council approved the amendment to include 100 West Center Street in our storage unit overlay zone that you guys approved a few, like a month ago. And we are going to have a public hearing the first meeting in October to do the Storage City property across the street. So they're coming and we're planning just to do the exact same thing. And then on September 16th, Sherry did a work session regarding the city-owned park strips and flipping them from sod. It was an interesting discussion. If she was here, I'd have her fill you in. So if you want to watch it, go ahead and go to the YouTube, but I'm not sure there's much to report there. And minutes.
All right. So the approval from the minutes from August 26th, are there any adjustments or amendments to the minutes? And if not, we can have a motion. Roll out the carpet.
Commissioner Jorgensen offer a motion to approve the meeting minutes from the August 26, 2025 Planning Commission meeting as drafted.
Thank you. And a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. All right. They approved and we are adjourned.